Welcome to Baltimore Internet Radio. I'm your host, Dave Custy. And today I'm talking to Kelly O'Connor, the Director of Diabetes Education at the Center of Endocrinology at Mercy Medical Center in Baltimore. Mercy's Diabetes Education Program plays an important role in the center's comprehensive care offering. As a registered dietitian with vast experience in nutrition counseling, Kelly leads a team of expert nurse educators, registered dietitians, and licensed diabetes educators who help patients manage their diabetes using best practices. Kelly O'Connor is a certified diabetes education and licensed dietitian. She's a member of the American Association of Diabetes Educators and the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, and she is dedicated to working individually with patients to develop effective diabetes management. As an advocate for diabetes health and management, Kelly regularly contributes advice and feedback to media outlets, online resources, and publications. Patients turn to Kelly for her expertise in all aspects of nutrition counseling, including meal planning, carbohydrate counting, and weight management. In addition to diabetes education, Kelly also provides nutrition counseling to Mercy's outpatient oncology patients, including those patients undergoing chemotherapy and radiation treatment. Welcome to Baltimore Internet Radio, Kelly.
Thanks so much, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Give us a little short bio there.
Oh, well, I've been a dietitian for over 25 years and worked in several different hospitals and facilities in Baltimore. And currently at Mercy, I have sort of a unique position where I'm split in half, and I have two separate areas, the Diabetes Center and the Outpatient Oncology Center, and really interesting, two almost polar opposite groups of patients to work with and manage those programs, so keeps me busy pretty much every day.
Give me a little history. Where are you from, and where did you go to school and all that kind of stuff?
Oh, I'm originally from upstate New York. And I went to school in Oneonta, which is a smaller town up near Cooperstown, best known for the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Right.
I did a four-year degree in nutrition with the goal of becoming a registered dietitian. And once I finished that degree, I came to Baltimore to complete an internship, which is kind of a one-year on-the-job training. And ironically, I did that 26, 27 years ago here.
Well, not to interrupt you, but how did it get to be Baltimore? I'm always interested in helping.
Oh, how did it get to be
Baltimore? Yeah.
Well, you know, rather a random choice, actually. The internships back then were very competitive, and there were not very many being offered in New York. So I had to apply to sort of some surrounding states. So I applied here at Mercy Hospital, believe it or not, and this is where I got accepted. So this is where I came after college, not knowing a single soul or a thing about Baltimore. And
now you're an expert,
a year,
right?
Yeah, oh, yeah, probably not. Spent a year at Mercy Hospital.
So you say you've been there 25 years. I just wanted to ask, how has it changed from when you started?
Oh, wow. Well, I haven't been at Mercy 25 years. I've been around Baltimore in different places, but it's nutrition is a really interesting field, Dave. It changes every day, and the research is always coming out with something new, and you know from media, you know, something that's good for you this year is bad for you next year.
I know. I do that with bacon.
Yeah, bacon, butter, you know, all the good tasty things.
1 year causes cancer, next year it's very good for you.
It's good for you. Yeah. Coffee, that's kind of my
favorite. In moderation, of course.
In moderation, yes. Yeah. So, you know, the recommendations are forever changing, and it's kind of a challenge and interesting to keep up. And I have spent most of my career in hospitals, so the change over the many years is pretty striking. We're finding more and more that if we can teach people good nutrition and get them to follow some healthy eating, you know, as preventative, we're trying to save both the patient and the hospital money. Who we haven't convinced that that's useful is the insurance companies yet. But,
yeah.
So after 25 years, not a whole lot has changed there. sadly. You know, it's an ever-changing field, and that's what I like about it.
Since, I mean, you've been working in nutrition and diabetes all these years, and do you think that people could become more aware of what they eat, even though, the obesity rate is just whatever.
Yeah, I think, people are now, because it's in the news, it's in the media, in every way about what diets are popular, what diets are helpful, what foods are beneficial, which foods are detrimental. So I think even if you're someone who's sort of determined not to make any changes yourself, I don't know how you can't help but be aware. But most of the progress actually is positive in terms of, having people say, I know I shouldn't be doing this, I'm not exactly sure what I should be doing, or it's confusing or overwhelming, but now I'm aware that what I'm doing is not really healthy for me. So I'm always glad when someone comes to me, at least acknowledging that part.
Right. Well, it's a start there.
At least a start, right.
Well, see, the thing is that I guess people who generally want to do things quick and easy, and of course they're busy and everything like that. And the fast food outlets are just horrendous in terms of nutrition.
Yeah.
I can remember years ago I used to live in New York, and there used to be a place called Amy's, which was fast food health place, which was terrific. And I thought, why does anybody start that? Because I'm sure people, young professionals especially, if they're coming home from 10 hours of work or whatever, they could go to some place and get something that's, better than a fast food salad.
Yeah,
the best thing
definitely.
You can get, because they had really good, they had great sandwiches with alfalfa sprouts, which I used to love, but it never really caught on. Something like that I think would be worthwhile for people.
But
business-wise, too. Maybe we'll start it. What do you think?
I'm in. On the side, why not?
Yeah.
Definitely, I don't think there's anything like that in Baltimore.
No, there isn't, because if you think about it, it's all the fast food places that have been known for years and years and years, and they're trying to be a little bit more health conscious, but they're not really,
It's not exactly,
if we can remain polite, it's not exactly a bastion of health.
No. We're still, I don't think I've ever really recommended that someone's going to make
that. It's funny. Before I went online here, I was looking on the internet, and there was a thing about since it's opening day all over, in Chicago the White Sox were serving this banana split, which said had about 3,000 calories or something like that, and they equated it to like 3 days worth of food in terms of calories, but not in health.
I'm sure that it tastes good. And once a year, you can probably
That's the thing. What I find difficult is that, you try to stay healthy, and now I'm in my upper 50s, and I try to stay healthy, but it seems to be that the healthier things seem to be more expensive.
Yeah, sometimes it's true, but that's definitely the perception.
Mm-hmm.
It really takes effort. You have to shop around.
Yeah.
If you think about fresh fruits and fresh vegetables, you have to go to the store often.
Yeah.
And for definitely a lot of our patients here in the inner city who have transportation issues or challenges, that's not realistic.
The thing is, you try to eat healthy, and then there's always the processed type of health foods, which doesn't seem to be just full of salt, and the need for an easier way of getting more healthy food.
I think that's a huge challenge all over the country.
Yeah.
And if we could solve that, we'd be millionaires for sure, because that's definitely an issue I discuss with my patients over and over, is the cost and sort of where to put the priority. And one of the things I usually tell them is, think about the things that you would eat and try to get those fresh. So if you would eat an apple every day, make that a priority. If you drink milk every day, maybe get the organic or the soy milk or the rice milk. Or if you eat bread every day, try to find whole grain. Most people are going to have to prioritize, because they're not going to be able to afford, as you're saying, Whole Foods or Trader Joe's or whatever, every day.
Yeah, it's tough, but it is, like you're saying, it is doable. You just have to really make a conscious effort, which is tough for a lot of people.
It's an overwhelming task for a lot of folks, so that's, kind of where we try to help, is just say, let's break it down and let's try to set a few reasonable goals, and let's try to prioritize and figure out where we want to start, because to sort of say I have to overhaul my entire eating habits is pretty daunting task.
Yeah, and
you know,
you don't want to start that way.
That'll last probably 2 days, you know.
Yeah, and that's right. It's like a trend, yes. Well, let's get back to the history of Kelly here.
Okay.
Tell us the evolution of how you got to your position today.
Oh, well, interesting evolution. I started out, actually, my first job was at University of Maryland, and kind of rotated around through lots of different areas in the hospital. But my heart always fell back to when I was doing my training during the summer that I was first in Maryland. I worked at what was then called Camp Glendon, and it was a camp for kids with diabetes. And I was sort of the free hired kitchen help back then, not really working as a dietitian, and kind of always stuck in my heart that I really liked working with people with diabetes. So as I sort of worked my way through just all the clinical areas in the hospital, which is generally what most dietitians do to sort of get a broad background, I found myself kind of going back again and again to diabetes. And because you can make a really significant difference and you can see, you know, a really viable outcome. I mean, if someone can come to you with really high blood sugars, you can help them. They can come back 2 months later and say, look, my blood sugars are, you know, 40 points lower, and you can see sort of an outcome. I really like that part of it. So probably about 10 or 12 years ago, I decided to pursue being credentialed in diabetes. So my credential is called CDE, Certified Diabetes Educator, and that was, you know, spending, I think it's 2,000 hours exclusively with diabetes patients and getting a certification. And then that really opened up a whole new world of diabetes education. And, you know, you would know yourself probably if you go to a doctor and they tell you you have high cholesterol or high blood pressure or diabetes, right. They don't have a lot of time to sit with you and explain to you what it is and exactly how to treat it. They may give you medication, but they don't have a great deal of time generally. So that's sort of where we picked up, is to make sure you have an understanding of, you know, first of all, what is diabetes and what type do you have and how to manage it and what part you need to play and what part the physician plays. And sort of, we kind of become the patient's team, so to speak. That's kind of how we always refer to the diabetes team. So it usually is comprised of a nurse, diabetes educator, and a dietitian, diabetes educator, as well as the physician.
Since you're the big cheese at diabetes education at Mercy, just tell me, like, I know there is no such thing. I still like asking this to all the Mercy medical people that I talk to.
Okay.
What's a typical day?
Oh, a typical day. For example, one of my favorite days is the day that we have diabetes class once a week. So for a couple hours, we kind of have almost like a, you know, a little classroom, and we have anywhere from 5 to 10 patients of varying ages. And we have a 4-week curriculum, so it's really fun to just sort of act like a teacher and get them involved and get them talking. And I would do that for a couple hours. And then perhaps in the afternoon, I actually, the way we work at Mercy is we have scheduled appointments just like a physician office. So maybe at 1 o'clock I would see a person who has diabetes during pregnancy, and that's another really interesting population. And then after that I would see, you know, for half an hour or an hour, one by one individually, patients with diabetes, and just work with them on where are they now in terms of blood sugars and weight, and where do they need to be, and what changes do they need to make in their eating. You know, every hour is different, let alone every day, at least for me, the way it works here at Mercy. The one thing about working with patients with diabetes is you get to have quite a lot of follow-up with them. So they would come back, you know, several times over the course of a year. So it's really fun to get to know them, and they kind of become your friends, and you learn a little bit about their families and, you know, what's gone on with them over the past couple months. And I like that part, as opposed to just saying, here's a diet and good luck.
Yeah,
you know, I never see you again.
I find that pervasive throughout all my interviews here with Mercy medical staff, that the priority is the people.
Yeah,
it's research and development is important, but it's, you know, you're dealing with human beings, and you know, they have feelings, and especially if you're talking about diabetes and such like that. And, you know, how do you break somebody in that is like kind of like me, but not even as aware as I am in terms of, you know, if they are a little bit overweight and you don't, like you said, don't want to be too daunting, how do you ease them into something that they'll, that'll last?
Yeah, that's the trick. I usually start by trying to, you know, once I see where they are, saying something like, what is one change that you can make today? And, you know, maybe let's say you're someone who drinks a lot of soda. So if you drink soda 3 times a day, after you talk to me today, can you skip one of them and you drink soda 2 times a day? You've probably cut out 150, 200 calories just by doing that. And can you do that for another 2 weeks? Mm-hmm. So I think by, at least I've had better luck by being very specific and very simple. I don't try to give a complicated meal plan. Generally.
Right.
And the other, you know, trick that has worked fairly well for people is to say, eat whatever you want, but eat half of it.
Right. And, well, that's funny you say that, because I've found that in my history of researching this and doing this, that is, and even talking to people that have been successful about it, that it's all about eating less, really.
Yeah.
Too. I mean, you don't have to eat more healthily, you know, just have a steady diet of bacon, although that would be the perfect world.
I think most of us just don't even realize that we could make do with smaller portion, because it's just such a habit to, you know, put 2 pieces of steak or 2 pork chops or 2 whatever it is on your plate. You're not even, you know, normally what I'm telling people is put one, eat the plate, wait 15 or 20 minutes. If you want the other, well, okay, if you have to have it, but don't just assume that you're going to need this enormous.
Well, see, I think another aspect of that, too, is how a person's mental state is. And I don't mean a mental illness. I just mean if your life is not going as well as you think it will be, eating food is a comfort.
Oh, definitely.
You know, and so how do you address something like that when somebody says, oh, you know, I've got, this is something I have complete control over.
Yeah.
And I want to have more. It makes me feel good while I'm doing it and, you know, that kind of stuff.
That's a challenge. I'm not sure I have the answer to.
No, I didn't think you had a panacea for everything, but
it's something
that I think you probably have to address, right?
Oh, frequently. I mean, sort of, you know, people talking about comfort foods. I mean, I do it myself. And I don't necessarily want to take those foods away from them. So what I, you know, sometimes what I'll tell them is eat it in this quantity, wait an hour or two, then eat more. If you have to, at least you've given your body time to burn up and process what you put in the first time, and in some cases that's been successful actually, because you're kind of teaching them a little bit to space things out, and that may help their metabolism process it a little more efficiently. And we're not taking it away; we're just saying, can you put it in a different manner? So sometimes. That's worked. You know, if I have a lot of time, I talk with them about doing something else for comfort, listening to music or, I don't know, talking on the phone or writing in a journal or all that sort of stuff. But the reality is most of us would rather just stick with the food, I think.
Right. But do you have any like collaborations with psychologists or people like that is there a cross-section of things?
Yeah, I mean, I do refer to counselors, but I don't generally, unfortunately, hear back from them all that much. But, yeah, no, definitely there are patients I've worked with who, diabetes and depression are closely linked. So there's definitely an well-documented association. So I have referred patients for counseling and for some overeating-type behaviors. And there are some patients who benefited from going to, like, overeaters and just sort of realizing what actually their behaviors are and being a little more aware of it has helped them without even having to have a whole lot of the counseling. So we just try to be individual here and see, you know, what the patient needs, if we can help it.
Talk a little bit about the nutrition counseling that you give to outpatient oncology patients.
Outpatient oncology is really an interesting area, sort of the exact opposite of diabetes. You know, in diabetes, I'm usually telling the person or helping them in cutting down what they're eating. And in outpatient oncology, for the folks going through chemo or radiation, I'm doing the exact opposite. Chemo, as everyone is probably really well aware, can have really devastating effects physically, can just take your appetite away, some nausea, some vomiting. A really prevalent side effect is losing your sense of taste or having your sense of taste altered. So it's quite a challenge to help an individual through chemo and try to maintain their nutritional status, try to maintain their weight, try to make sure they have enough protein. And often when you're so ill and having, you know, perhaps so many treatments and you have a number of medications to take, eating just becomes sort of the lesser priority. So I sort of feel like it's my position to put eating back in front of, you know, putting it on top or near the top of the priority list again and saying, this is really important tool in helping you get through the chemo. And the research shows that people with better nutrition do have a better outcome and go through chemo a little bit more easily. So it's really interesting. And again, you really get to know them because they come for chemo frequently.
How would that work in the relationship to oncologists?
I'm working actually with the oncologists. The oncologists here at Mercy have been awesome in recognizing when people, a patient's nutritional status is kind of deteriorating, and the nurses as well. I mean, I get many calls every day saying, can you talk to so-and-so? She's lost 10 pounds, or I'm going to refer this patient to you. He's going to have chemo and radiation, and certain combinations of treatment, we know there's going to be some eating issues. So I've been really fortunate here at Mercy that the oncologists are awesome, and we work together in, you know, sort of working out a nutrition plan for the patients, and it's a really great relationship.
Tell me a bit about how you see yourself in about from 3 months to 5 years, let's say. I know you can't really tell, but, you know, I'm sure it's staying the course somewhat, but as things develop, I mean, it must be very interesting in terms of new research coming out and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the research has just, you know, continued to show that nutrition is a factor in preventing so many diseases and so many medical conditions. So I look forward to sort of playing a part in that and helping both the public and the hospitals and the insurance companies know that nutrition is valuable, and we need to be sure that people have access to it. And in the hospital, it's a little bit easier because, you know, some of the patients are kind of captive, and you can talk to them. So it's about getting the words out, I think, to the communities. Mm-hmm. And some of that is part of my job to go out into the community of health fairs and sort of make people aware about their nutrition, whether it's diabetes or oncology or just weight or general eating. And that's the part I really, really like, the people interaction. So I kind of see myself always having that as part of my job. I've done some management of nutrition services before, and I really prefer just being the worker bee, I guess, and being in the trenches with the patients and trying to help them, you know, solve their problems and find the nutrition resources that they need and work with the docs in getting those resources. Particularly here in the inner city, I really enjoy that part of it. So hopefully I'll be around somewhere nearby, if not at Mercy.
So you think you're sticking around Baltimore?
I'm probably, you know, unless I win that Mega Millions. I'm
and of course of our fast food plan. And
yes, that's, you know, right, our healthy
various franchises we'll be selling and such.
Yes, we may be able to go elsewhere, I don't know. Something tropical, maybe.
Oh, yeah, we could, you know, sub it out to somebody and spend time down in Aruba or something.
Oh, yeah, there we go. I think they need counseling on the beach there.
Yeah.
You know, pina coladas, calorie count, those sorts of things.
Oh, yeah, geez, you know, we could go open up an outlet saying, I know you're on vacation, but still, you know, still
right.
Moderation, but go ahead. Get me another pina colada while you're getting it.
That's right. That sounds like a good plan.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Well, don't tell anybody. This is our plan, okay?
All right. Sounds good.
Okay. Of course, you're accessible, and I won't go into contact information. But my last question is to somebody just generally. Of course, everybody wants to be healthy and all. What we suggest just as a starter to avoid diabetes?
you know, the biggest factor I would probably say that influences your risk of developing diabetes is weight. Mm-hmm. So if you, and the research shows you don't need to lose, you know, 100 pounds, but actually 10% of what you weigh now. So if you weigh 200, that's 20 pounds. If you weigh 150, 15 pounds. So if nothing else, if you just, you know, for some individual to say, how do I get started? If you began to start by losing 5 or 10 pounds, you've made a significant difference in helping your body, you know, utilize blood sugar better and try to prevent that type 2 diabetes from coming on.
What about age? When you get older, of course, you should be more aware of things like blood sugar and cholesterol. Is there a time period in terms of every 6 months, every year, 2 years, or whatever? Because it seems like things are coming out now that, I mean, I was just reading an AARP about all these medical techniques and stuff that maybe not be, you know, useful.
Yeah, that's true.
Things are changing so much. But just generally, there's a lot of obesity out there.
Yeah.
If you're 10%, 20% overweight, and you're in your, let's just say, my age rate, over 50s, how often should you really address it? I mean, you should address it daily, but I mean, in terms of doctors, you're going to mercy.
I mean, at least annual. You know, you see your primary care annually. Mm-hmm. There is a test if you have a history of diabetes or for whatever reason might be at risk. There's a test. It's called a hemoglobin A1C, and it's a test that's done every 3 months to basically measure the amount of blood sugar in your system. So that would be something that you may inquire, you know, if you don't have diabetes, you probably don't need it more than once a year. But if you have diabetes, we do get it at least every 6 months, if not every 3 months. But that might be a starting point. They've begun to look at that test and lower the bar, and now we're talking about something called pre-diabetes,
mm-hmm.
Where years ago we were saying, you know, you're borderline. Now we're saying you're not borderline. You're what's called pre-diabetes, and if you take action, you can prevent type 2 diabetes from coming on. So that test, hemoglobin A1C, is a useful one to have if your doctor would agree to. Just, you know, when you get your regular blood work.
You talk about you being a CDE, and I mm-hmm. glossed over that, but also you're an RD and LDN. Tell me about that.
Well, the RD just stands for Registered Dietitian, so that is credential similar to being a registered nurse. So basically it means I have met certain qualifications, and I have to have continuing ed every year to maintain that credential. The LDN is a Maryland state term, so that just means licensed dietitian and nutritionist. Each state has a different process for licensing. And one of the things we sort of always get picky about as a registered dietitian is many, many people can call themselves nutritionists, but you're not necessarily a registered dietitian. So, you know, I would encourage people, if you want to speak to someone, look for that RD, because you know that then they've met certain criteria and have, you know, the experience necessary to be the credentialed person.
All right, Kelly, well, give us some of your contact info.
Oh, sure. I can be reached at the Mercy Diabetes Center, and that phone number is 410-332-9800. Also, feel free to contact me by email, and my email is koconnor, all lowercase and kind of squished together,
mm-hmm.
koconnor, and it's koconnor, at mdmercy.com.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, it's I think it's lunchtime, so go out and eat healthy.
Good, that's a good segue, I like that.
You like that?
Well, I hope that you enjoyed this and that we...
Oh, you were a blast.
That you will continue to give me some updates and we can do this
sure.
on an ongoing basis.
Oh, I would love to. Thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
My pleasure. I've been talking to Kelly O'Connor, RD, LDN, CDE. See, I included it this time.
Yeah, thank you.
Director of Diabetes Education at the Center for Endocrinology at Mercy Medical Center in Baltimore, Maryland. You've been listening to Baltimore Internet Radio, and I'm your host, Dave Custy.